Request the honor of your presence. The tear gas has blown away. Put down your crumpets and your coffee now. So unfashionably late.
Well, folks, you are listening to the Drew Marshall Show, heard every Saturday here on Joy 1250 between 1 and 5 o'clock. And our special guest on the show today, the frontman for one of the biggest groups in the Christian music scene today. We're talking everything from kangaroo suits to tender boogers to shoveling elephant dung. Peter Furler on the phone with us. Peter, good to have you, mate.
Hey, Drew. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, real well. It's an odd way to introduce you. I got to be honest, Peter. I'm old, right? I think you and I are maybe born in the same year, and I've just kind of come on to your whole scene. And so when I found out about kangaroo suits, tender boogers, and microwaves and shoveling elephant dung, I got excited about this interview.
You thought it was right down your alley,
buddy. This is it. I'm all over this one.
Born, well, I'm glad to be of service.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks. Born in Adelaide, as they say over there, Australia. There's no AU. To Bill and Rosalie in 1966. That was a good year, mate. That was a great year.
A good year. Is that your year too, Drew, is it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Good, mate.
Now, are you going to write a reflective sort of life song like Stonehill did and call it Turning 40?
No, not as yet. I sort of feel like we've been in the middle of making a new album, and it's really felt like I'm 20 again, you know, so it's been a... It hasn't been any struggle or anything, and I've got a lot of friends around me that sort of keep me honest, and so it's been good. We're in the middle of our best album we've ever made. So.
Good.
Makes you feel young, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and hanging around guys with long, flowing blonde hair like Fabio, that keeps you young too, right?
Well, you'd have to talk to him about that.
I am follically challenged myself, and that kind of stuff drives me nuts. Hey, listen, you were born into a Super Spiro family. You got a father as a missionary, a pastor, or something like that?
Yeah, that's correct. My dad, missionary to the South Pacific, still is, him and my mother. And so a lot of the Fijian islands, Yasawas, and New Caledonia, all that sort of down that way. And in the last few years, has been on the road with us quite a bit.
Nice.
Coming out as sort of, I guess he figured we were a bit of a mission field too, and so he's been out with us, and it was interesting, you know, growing up in the church, you know, because it can be just as confusing sometimes as not growing up with any church, you know, you sort of, but it's been an awesome discovery, you know, moving from that in the last few years. Every day seems, well, actually, to be honest, every week seems like something new is happening in each of our lives in the band, and to do with church, and to do with our faith, and to do with the Word, and to do with Jesus, and so it's been really incredible.
What denominational baggage did you grow up with?
Well, my father was pretty non-denominational because he had to work with lots of different denominations. I believed he was, I know he was ordained as Assemblies of God, and but, you know, like I said, my father was very, probably truly interdenominational, where he was he believed that, you know, there's many different denominations, but there's truly one church.
A lot of Christian musicians grew up with the happy clappies because that's where the good tunes were. Was that kind of your slant back then?
Well, I grew up with that until I was probably about... Actually, I started playing drums. It was a great place to learn music because there were so many different styles. So I started playing drums in church when I was about 10 years old. And then I sort of picked up guitar. And then, to be honest with you, by the time I was 15, I really didn't go to church, and I just kind of, my father was out sort of doing mission work, and it sort of enabled me just to really not be involved at all, which was sort of sad, I guess, and it was probably for the next, I would say the next 15 years, maybe 15 to 20 years, I really wasn't involved that much in church, didn't know what it was there for. I didn't have anything against it, I believed in it, but I didn't understand its purpose, and it's only really been the last few years that I've really join with a local community where I live in Tennessee and really sort of walk with their leadership and begin to understand the purpose of the church. You know, it's God's purpose for the earth. You know, it's the church, and we're his hands and feet, and we can't do it alone. We have to walk together with one another, and you can't really make disciples of Jesus unless you really are one. And so, and that's what's really been a defining moment in my life, really, just having, you know, being a man, having men in my life that I look at and go, yeah, that's what I want to be like, and that's how they would handle that situation, and having people praying for you, and all these things. And I think I begin to see, you know, that it's not just a building, it's not just something that has, it's not a club, it's not us versus them, it's not the saved versus the unsaved, it's not us packing our bags and waiting on our rooftops for Jesus to come back, it's us, no matter what the passion God gives us, it's using that with a plan to affect the culture for his kingdom. It's like, the challenge to me in the last year has really been the prayer that Jesus told his disciples to pray when they came to him and said, you know, hey, teach us how to pray. You know, John the Baptist taught his disciples how to pray. Why don't you teach us how to pray? And he said, all right, well, and one of the few lines was, you know, our Father who art in heaven, holy is your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth that is in heaven. And I believe that Jesus was starting a new revolution right there. And it's my thing is imagining, you know, if everybody on the earth or everybody in whatever state or they're in, if they decided to just forgive one another and to love one another, or even just to act like Jesus for a month, the planet would be different. There'd be no murder, and there'd be no hatred, there'd be no envy and no strife and lust and all these things. There'd be no child predators, and there'd be all this, none of this crazy stuff going on if everybody just had the power of Jesus in them. And obviously, as Christians, we believe the only way you can have the power of his power in you is to have him inside of you, and that is by faith. And so that's been, there have been things that have been, might sound super spiritual to some people, but I can't do much about that. But I believe he's the light to the earth, and I believe when we follow him, we can stay out of as much darkness as possible. And so that's really been what's been a challenge to me, coming from that background where it was really just seemed to me to be just one of the mistakes you can make is let people in the church begin to define your relationship with God.
Exactly.
They can either define it in a bad way or they can define it in a good way. And I begin to ask God to bring the right people into my life, and him being faithful, he began to surround me with great people that I saw, yes, I see what the church is for now. Yeah, this is our time in history, and this is our generation, and we're on watch. You know what I mean? It's not just our job to, you know, sort of like I said, pack our bags and wait and let the schools fall apart and let the families fall apart and let the government fall apart and let people's lives fall apart. No, we're meant to restore them things because we've been restored.
Okay, well, I got nothing else. Holy cow.
Sorry about that.
No, that was, I was actually listening to that thinking of how reminiscent that was of quite a number of things I've heard Bono say over the last few years. So,
I think it's something that's happening on the earth where people are, you know, they're getting to a place where they're realizing, hey, look, the things that we've been putting our trust in are not paying up. You know, we've been putting our trust in cash. Well, you just can't do that because sometimes it just doesn't come. You know, you can, it's like loving somebody. You can love them to keep the peace, but what happens when there's no peace there? It's got to go deeper than that. You can love someone to get something out of them, but what happens when you don't get that out of them? Or you can love someone out of reverence to Jesus and reverence to God for who he is and out of respect to him and walk closely with him. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't matter their response, you know. And so I think that's what Jesus is calling us to do. There's a road that's there, and yes, it's narrow. We've heard the parable. But when you begin to find it, we can all, for many years I worried about my purpose. I was in a band that was successful and I really enjoyed my job, but I was wondering, what is my real purpose? Am I meant to just go out here and entertain people and sort of give my two-cent opinions here and there, or am I meant to, is there something else? And I believe that there's been million-seller books written about purpose, and it's all great, but I believe myself that you can't really enter into your purpose and find it fully until you know what God's doing. And one thing the Bible says what God is doing is he is building a church, and that's what Jesus is doing. He's building a church, and I think I want to be a part of that. And when we begin to enter into that, we begin to find hope. Oh, I see what I'm meant to do on this earth. If it doesn't line up with the church that Jesus is building and his kingdom that he's establishing, then it's probably not going to be a fruitful thing.
Geez, you're a passionate bloke, aren't you?
Well, yeah, it happens every now and then.
Folks, we're on the phone with Peter Furler from the Newsboys. Back in the early 80s, when you were surrounding yourself with mattresses in your garage, were you singing Jesus music back then, or was it just whatever came into your head?
Well, it's funny because, you know, growing up in Australia, there wasn't a Christian music scene.
No.
You know, there was no such thing. I mean, we didn't know what it was. You know, we don't have a large country, and so any scene is quite small. But you know, we just grew up. We would play anywhere. You know, we played cover songs, and a cover song is obviously just whatever you wanted to play. You know, someone else's tune. We'd play top 40 songs, but at the same time, while we were writing our own songs, and so we'd go and play on the beaches. We'd play anywhere for free, birthday parties, and you name it. You know, yeah. And we'd play there for free to get the experience, and we would be adding in our own songs then. So, and obviously they were kind of faith-based because we were trying to work it out, you know, work out what is this thing that we believe. Do we believe it because, you know, we were raised that way, or do we believe it because it's going to take a hold of us?
Well, you're a drummer turned rapper turned lead vocalist. I miss that whole rapping stage. One of the funniest things I ever saw was one of the guys from DC Talk fell off the stage in the middle of a rap. And
funny you bring them up because we did a lot of shows with Toby, Michael, and Kevin, and we did pretty much one rap song, and that was really because we were sort of taking the mickey out of them. We were having a joke, and we put it on the record because we were on tour with them at the time, because I was sort of saying to them that, you know, rap is just easy and it's, anybody can do it. And so we put this rap song, and it ended up being a really popular song, which we kind of really wished that it hadn't been.
Yeah, that's like, again, like Randy Stonehill hoping he never hears Shut De Doe ever again, you know.
Right, I'm sure, yeah.
Now, over 20 years later, and if I understand things right, 20 band member changes later? Is that right? 20 band member changes?
No, I don't think there's been that many. If there has, there must have been a few sneaking in and out.
Man, I didn't think it was that many either.
No, well, the guys we've got at the moment, we've got Phil's been with us for 12 years. Duncan's been with us. Actually, I've known Duncan for about 21 years before the band started, but he's been with the band for about, I believe, about 13 or 14 years. This will be his 14th year, and then the same with Jeff, 14 years. So quite a long time. Paul's a new member, Paul Coleman.
Oh yeah, listen, he is tremendous. I saw him when I used to live in Australia, and when I was down there, I heard him talk and sing, and I tell you, the words that came out of his mouth, he's a brilliant communicator.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, that's sort of his gift, and so it's been a we had Jody Davis was our guitarist. There was Brian played before. Brian was sort of more awesome guy, good friend, but he sort of had a side project which became a main project, and that was his own band, Casting Pearls. And we sort of always kind of knew that, and Brian stepped in to sort of replace, you know, so we had somebody, because Jody, who'd been with us for about 13 years, his little baby got very, very ill, and so he had to pull out of the band because of that and to look after her. And so it was a very sad situation for the band, and so we actually just saw Jody, but Brian stepped in for about a year and a half, and then when we'd known Paul for about 7 or 8 years, and it just seemed a natural natural progression to sort of have him in the band. We'd actually never thought about it until we did a show with him. We're like, man, he was in a place in his life where he needed some people around him just for fellowship. Really, he can be lonely out there as a soloist,
sure.
And so he began to, you know, we began to chat more so, and then I asked him to join. But yeah, sometimes the perception is, you know, you had a lot of members, but there really hasn't. As I look back,
okay.
I mean, Kevin Mills was killed in a motorcycle accident, and so Phil took his place, and so yeah, it really hasn't seemed like that many to me. But it seems like what we have now is they've been a part of my life, most of my life. Seems like.
Folks, we're on the phone with Peter Furler from the Newsboys. Peter, one of the things I'm trying to figure out is, like, you're huge because you're talented and God's blessed you. I get all that, but is another reason you're huge is because you were able to make the big move to the States and get out from underneath the tall poppy syndrome?
Well, for those that are listening who don't know what the tall poppy syndrome, maybe they do know what it is, but it's a syndrome whenever somebody starts to excel, people like to cut them down. And Australia's definitely known for that within itself. And I don't know if, you know, I think really it's just been a wild ride, you know, and I don't know what tomorrow brings. We didn't know it back then either. I didn't really sit down in Australia and think, I want to go to America, or I want to go to Canada, or I want to go here, or England, or wherever. We were really just happy to play music and to be able to be fed. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think it's still the same way. We've found as a band that one of the principles is never do anything just for the money. Because you just end up disappointed somewhere. As a band, we have a bit in my personal life with business things. I've done some things where I just did them. Oh, that's a good way to do this, and it didn't work out. And so it's been a change. But you know what? It's been something that has been in the band since the beginning. And I don't know. I go back and listen to our early records, and I can't believe people bought them. You know what I mean? And I'm very thankful, of course. But I feel that the best is yet to come. In fact, I know for a fact the record that we're making now, without a doubt, is out the best record we've ever made. I'm convinced, and everybody I show it to is too.
Good. Well, you guys have made the transition into the whole worship genre, and I say that with some trepidation because, again, having spent some decent time in Australia, I got sort of Darlene-jecked out. I got sort of Hillsonged out, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think for us, I think it was a challenge for us to learn it. Yeah, I mean, I know that sounds strange, but it's the truth. It was like we needed to get skillful at it. The Psalms talk about being skillful, play your instrument skillfully, and I think that, you know, it seemed at that time we were making those records, it really started from the song It Is You. I really felt sad in my heart because I could go out on stage and make people jump around and have a great time, have this kind of you know, a celebration or a party, but I really was sitting in my house one day, and I was thinking about the next show. We were going to a show the next night playing in some arena, and I really felt this voice sort of say to me, well, why don't you lead them in worship? How are you going to do that? You're a musician. All through the Word of God, there's really two jobs the musicians do. They David plays a harp, and it soothes Saul, and then the others are leading progressions of worship, and that was one I sort of knew how to make people feel good, but I didn't really know how to bless God with my music, at least not that I knew. And so I wrote that song, It Is You, and then it just, I really had to learn it. I know it sounds crazy. There's worship leaders out there that are so skilled at it, and they're in front of a congregation every weekend, and they have to keep coming up with new songs, and they develop something, and they get skillful at it, and I respect that and admire it, but I couldn't do it.
No, so. Well, I mean, here's a quote from Steve Taylor. It's just very hard for me to write lyrics for something where craft sort of takes a back seat. You can't write worship lyrics based on craft. It's much more mystical process, and there are songs on both Adoration and Devotion that I think touch on something beyond what either Peter or myself are able to write.
Right, and that's the truth, and that's what we had to learn. I think we were learning that, and maybe it was a process of unlearning, you know, unlearning your formulas and unlearning the things, and just opening up your ears and listening.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's been, and I'm thankful to say the new album we're working on is back to sort of it's Newsboys Rock and Roll, but yet we haven't left behind what we've done before. You know, we didn't sort of, it wasn't a phase for us. It was a new part of our lifestyle, and so this new album sort of has maybe what Thrive had, a little bit of both, but just better songs.
You know, I was down at the GMA week down there in Nashville, and Rebecca St. James and I were catching up and just chatting about stuff. What a neat girl she is. You know the schmooze fest where you shake someone's hand and look over their shoulder to see if there's somebody more important in the room?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, Rebecca St. James does not do that, and I was so impressed with her genuineness there. She challenged me on my cynicism when it comes to the Christian music scene, or comes to Nashvilleitis, or even when it comes to this worship phenomena that's out there. And I know that you've struggled with that as well, Peter. I mean, just naturally as an Aussie bloke, you must have struggled with that, let alone being the big Christian musician that you are. How have you overcome sort of this cynicism within the business?
Well, I remember when I used to try and read the Bible and I couldn't read it. You know, it bored me and it angered me, confused me. I began to ask God, look, God, if I'm meant to read this, and this is the bread of life, and this is meant to make me grow, and this is meant to define me and help me know the truth from lies and help me know when you're speaking to me, then I need you to give me a love for it. And one of the first things that came into my head was, who do you think doesn't want you to read it?
Right.
And so obviously I realized that's the enemy of our soul. And the same thing happened when I was, when this whole worship, whatever people want to call it, worship movement began to come in. I was like this rocker, you know, pop guy who loved, you know, catchy hooks and this stuff. And when it came in, I thought, what is this? Then I begin to sort of get skeptical. But then I realized, who do you think wants you to be skeptical of this?
Yeah.
Who do you think doesn't want people worshiping me? Who do you think? And so I begin to realize that, you know what, it's better to err on the other side. And you know what? The thing I love, too, is people aren't stupid. People are very smart deep down inside. They might not be eloquent always with words. They might not be a Bono who can always put a phrase together and a Steve Taylor who can come up with a witty lyric. But people still deep down inside know when they hear something and they want it. And I think with no one was beating anybody over the head to stand up in an arena or in a church and raise their hands and worship God. That's something you can't make people do. And that's what I loved about it. And that's why I had to either fight it or I had to humble myself and learn it. And here's me, I've sold millions of records, and I don't need to enter into that. But as a Christian, then I needed to. That is a crucial part of my life, and it still is. It's something that, are we making a worship record right now? No, we're not. But it's still a huge part of my life, as much, probably more so than it was then. And like Steve said, you have to shut off some taps in your life to be able to really hear what it's doing and what's saying. But I do know one thing, and that is that I'm seeing a massive change through North America and places around the world like Australia, New Zealand and Europe, where there is a youth rising up that are really going to affect the culture. They're going to be the next leaders, and they're going to be great people for the kingdom of God. And I believe a big part of that has been the worship movement. I don't think it's just been from quirky pop songs or anybody trying to make God relevant or make God cool. God doesn't need CCM to make him look cool.
Yeah.
And he just actually needs us to be obedient, and then he'll be glorified. And so I'm beginning to see massive things. So I do pray. I've gone the opposite way now. Yeah, am I going to make worship records the rest of my life? I don't think so, because I'm not making one now, because God has given me something else as well. You know, he's given me, I believe our music is for the culture, and I believe it's also, I really believe it's for the church. I believe it's really to stir the saints and to challenge them on the place that they find themselves in at the moment.
Well, is someone having a cappuccino in the background there?
Yeah, sorry about that. That's actually all the boys are sitting at a restaurant in St. John, and I think they're all trying out this seafood something, and then now they're getting cappuccino.
Nice. I was chatting with Donald Miller, author of Blue Like Jazz, and he says that he actually prefers the Canadian brand of Christianity over the American style. You know, he sort of says it's less hokey. Being an Aussie, do you still find it a weird phenomena, American Christianity versus maybe the rest of the world?
Well, you know, America's a different place than the rest of the world. It's an awesome place. I actually really love it. I live there. I wouldn't live there if I didn't love it. But I really have a heart for it. I have a heart for the church there. And I think there's a thing you can do where we can make the mistake of, and I've made this mistake, and I can get real, it comes naturally to me, and I can get real judgmental and real, all of a sudden standing on a bandwagon of, oh, the church is this and the church is that, and look at all these hokey books they're writing and this hokey music they're making and these hokey T-shirts and these slogans and these hokey sermons and all this stuff. But at the same time, now I can stand on the outside, or I can get in there and be a part of it and try to make a change, you know what I mean? And so I think I'm voting for the latter, you know.
Yeah.
Where that's what I feel. I'm not saying that's my job, and it's not one that I don't want to be on a bandwagon doing that, because it's not, I don't believe it's my call. Lord, I hope it's not my calling. But what I really feel it is it's just with the friends and family that are around me. It's, it's just getting people to, you know, because most of them people, a lot of them people don't really read the Bible. They've just got a sentimentality, you know what I mean, a sort of a spiritual awareness of something. And, you know, you can tell the difference. The other side of it is, too, is they're the people that usually get the most publicity. You know, the ones that have read all the Left Behind books, they're waiting on the rapture, they've packed their bags on the rooftop, everything that happens in the Middle East is the end times, and so they're getting themselves fixed so they don't have to have any children and bring them into this rotten earth, and whatever light that they had, the world has put a bucket over it, and it makes fun of them on television.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact there is a new generation rising up that are not knocking them people, because we are brothers and sisters, but they're not wasting their energy fighting that. They're using their energy to sort of take on the real enemy.
All right, Peter Furler, I want to read a quote from you here. We have no authority to be on stage if our family life is in a mess. we won't really have anything to say. I mean, I've never met anyone that was glad their marriage didn't work out. It's just not the plan that God has. You can be putting your ministry above your family. It's a huge mistake that a lot of senior pastors make and a lot of Christian musicians make. The enemy loves you to put your ministry first. Then what happens is you're going to make your family, your wife, your kids end up resenting anything to do with ministry. So I had to find that, and until that time, it became a bit of a mess. That's a pretty heavy quote, man. I think what I just read in there is that you went over to the dark side, treated the ministry and the business of it all with, maybe more of a priority than your wife, and it sounded like your marriage almost went down the gurgler.
Yeah, it was definitely, that's how you described it in that quote, that was it. It was a time of, I think in the end it all comes down to selfishness, you know, which we know, you know, you're sort of putting yourself first and you somehow, you see people that have, I can remember hearing a story just recently about a man who had gone over and started a tremendous, health organization and to reaching children, and in the process he lost his whole family. You know what I mean? He lost his wife and kids, as far as he just left them behind because he was so caught up with the mission that he forgot the mission that was at home. And I think that that's where we'll become different than others, you know, if we can. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm always careful when I talk about that, because I know people are going through hardships. And I know they're going through tough times in their marriage, because it is just the way it is, man. You know what I mean? No matter who you are. But I guess it's more of an encouragement to push through to the other side, to see what's on the other side in a relationship, to push through. There's something, you know, I've been in this band for 20 years. I've been with a lot of these guys. I've got the same manager I've had for 20 years. And we don't get on like a house on fire. It doesn't mean we sort of just hang out together and everything's rosy. There's times we butt heads and iron sharpen an iron. But I believe that, like I said before, in my marriage, I've found one of the secrets is to love my wife out of reverence to God. I don't do it. I used to think I sort of did things for her because I was trying to, hey, I want to ride motorbikes on the weekend, so I'll be nice all this week. You know what I mean? And silly stuff like that. You're in a situation where you just you have to realize that this person is somebody that God cares about. You know what I mean? If God cares about them, you should too. And no matter what their attitude or what it is, obviously, if some wife's getting beaten up by the husband, that's a pastoral situation where they've got to go to the church and get things sorted out. But I think what I was talking about was just good old-fashioned selfishness.
Sure.
And one mistake a man can make is he makes a living and then he comes into the home thinking, hey, I make a living, you know, so I should deserve all this, you know what I mean? Or, hey, I'm the breadwinner here, so I provide everything, and so you expect something. But really, that's your job, you know what I mean? That's what you're meant to do anyway. That's like, a police officer pulling you over and saying thanks for not speeding, you know what I mean? It's like, dude, that's what you're not meant to do anyway.
So, exactly.
I think it's really that was the thing. And there was many different things, but if I could pinpoint it, would just be selfishness, you know. When you're in a place in your life where you've gotten everything you want, and you realize it's not what you wanted, you're in trouble, you know. And when you're in a place in your life where you're asking, what am I doing, you know, who am I, what am I doing with my life, sometimes that can be unhealthy. As a Christian, it really can, because you really have been told the answers, but if they're not alive in your heart and the purpose of God is not alive in your heart, man, it can be really hard, because you can't go out and have sin, you know, have fun having some sin, because you get too convicted.
Yeah.
And you can't. And it's a bore sometimes to stay where you're at, you know what I mean? So I think when you get that purpose in your heart, that's what, it begins to put everything into perspective. That's what Jesus died for. That's what the kingdom is. That's what my life's for. That's how it lines up. That's what the Word of God's for. That's what the church is for. That's what my friends around me are for. That's what my wife's for. Oh, I get that, and that's awesome, you know?
Well, look, at the risk of getting up your nose on this, I mean, how's your marriage? Is summer still your favorite season, so to speak?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's getting better all the time. I mean, we sort of, it was tough for a while, you know, a few years back, but that was probably 5 years ago, and it's just really been getting better. I mean, we've just celebrated our 15-year anniversary, and so
Anya.
It just seems to be... Yeah, thanks, mate. It just seems to be sort of getting, you know, it's getting better, that's for sure, and it wasn't something, that was the funny thing, we sort of, it wasn't it started out great, you know what I mean? And so it was just probably, you know, mistakes that I made, especially. I can really only look to myself, and because I'm the only one I can change.
Sure, sure.
That's the other thing, too. But a big mistake in marriage is try to change your partner. I think one of the secrets I've found is change yourself. And as I begin to change myself and become a different person, all of a sudden it's had this effect on her. And so I think that maybe that's a sign of how we're meant to be on the world, is to, you know, be that change and you know, change ourselves, and then we'll see something happen. And but it's awesome.
You know, in doing the research on you, I just figured out that you are so part of the Christian music mafia. You know, you married Mylon Lefebvre's daughter. Is it Lefebvre or Lefebvre? I could never pronounce that guy's name.
It's Lefebvre.
Lefebvre, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So you married Mylon Lefebvre's daughter, and you work with Steve Taylor. Like, Steve's your right, you know, you and him are partners or whatever. You know,
definitely, yeah.
My memories of Steve Taylor were him wearing some crazy bright yellow banana suit with that new wave punk haircut and dancing like Carlton off of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Right. Yeah, Steve's, I'm still riding with him. We're in the middle of this new record, and it's been a blast, and we're all excited because you know when you've got a good record, you know, and I don't think we've had a record like this since really Take Me to Your Leader, and I know for a fact it's beyond that, and so it's something where it just feels fresh to us, and so we're enjoying it. But he's awesome. I mean, Steve, he comes off on stage as this kind of real strange, wacky guy, and he is kind of whack, but at the same time, he's really a man after the Lord's heart, which is really, he's very innocent in a lot of ways, and that's what I really like about him. He's sort of he's a very innocent guy, but he sort of traveled the world, and so he kind of gets our culture, and we've just been writing songs for, I guess, 12 or 13 years now. We've probably written about 100 songs together. And we're still enjoying it.
Tremendous. All right, folks, we've got a concert coming up this Sunday here in Toronto at Canada Christian College. It's going to be at 7:30. Again, that's this Sunday, May 21st, 7:30. I got a couple of free tickets to give away to someone who wants to call me up during the break. Now, listen, this is the cheesiest thing I've ever done in an interview, but I stayed up so late last night doing research on you that, you know, when you stay up till 2 in the morning, your mind gets a little weird and you start doing stupid things.
I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Oh, get out of it. You do, too. I tried to imagine a typical day in Peter Furler's life, okay? And here's what I came up with, right? Peter Furler from the Newsboys, here's a typical day. Driving to the Red Rocks Amphitheater, stopping by 4th and Main, grabbing some Melba Toast, listening to the Atlanta Braves on your radio and your FB Holden with Bull and Coco in the backseat, and recording your best Scooby-Doo impressions on your dictaphone, while dreaming of catching a few waves after a hard day's work with the Malulaba Bushfire Brigade.
That's pretty good. That sounds like a nice day to me.
It sounds like I'm some neurotic fan or stalker or something like that.
Yeah, he does. You're right.
Yeah, sorry about that. Told you I stayed up too late. Listen, mate, I have so much appreciated hearing what's on your heart, and I wish you the best in your personal life. I'm glad you're hooked into a church. I'm glad that you and the senior pastor there are buds and mates, and, you know, you're this iron sharpens iron stuff. You and, is it Rice Brooks?
Yeah, that's one of the many. There's quite a few. It takes a few to keep me in line.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can well imagine. So, listen, have a great time here Sunday night in Toronto at Canada Christian College, 7:30, the Newsboys live, folks. Peter, thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, Drew. You too, and have a good one, mate.
Take care. Peter Furler from the Newsboys. We're going to take a short break, come back with our Journey segment here on the Drew Marshall Show. If you're interested in a couple of free Newsboys tickets for Sunday night, you want to call 905-338-1250 right now. 905-338-1250. We've got a couple of tickets for Sunday night. Have a little listen to the boys. We'll be right back on the Drew Marshall Show.
The song of Asian believers, filled with God's holy fire. It's every tribe, every tongue, every nation, a love song born of a grateful choir. It's all God's children singing. Let praises echo from the towers of cathedrals to the faithful gathered underground.
Singing glory, glory, hallelujah, he reigns.